Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo.
And I'm Bob Bretall. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review.
This is Weekly Comics Spotlight 140 for comics originally released on April 14th, 2010. Starting us off in DC is Doc Savage number 1. It's part of the First Wave initiative, and it's got not only a main story with Doc Savage, but a backup feature, or a quote-unquote second feature, of Justice Inc. Now, Bob, I know you're a much bigger Doc Savage fan than I am. I've read the series DC did back, what, in the 90s or whatever. Read the Doc Savage Batman special. Liked that a lot. They did recently. Really enjoying First Wave. I was really, frankly, very disappointed with this issue.
I hated this issue. It's like, my advice, anyone who likes Doc Savage, steer clear of this and go read First Wave.
Yeah.
I hope this title dies a swift death so that I don't have to even contemplate its existence.
The art
was weak. The storytelling was weak. The characters were drawn completely off model, which is, if you don't know anything about the characters, that's fine, but Doc Savage looks like some kind of circus strongman. I can understand what they were trying to do with, he's finishing up this adventure and he's starting a new one, but he's, like holding a lion over his head and he's got this, freakish strongman physique. And
he almost looked like the Hulk in that particular shot.
This was terrible in every way. For new readers, I mean, by contrast, you look at the Avenger story at the back.
Yeah, or the Justice Inc.
The Avenger story was good. You read that, they introduce the characters, they give the names of the characters, they give their motivations, they talk a little bit about why they're associated with this guy. Doc's team, I don't think they mentioned hardly any of them by name. I was able to pick out, Ham and Monk and Rennie and Long Tom, and, but that's just because I know the characters, for a long time, and, I should not have to be ferreting these characters out of the first issue,
Now, in fairness, quite a few of them, like Rennie and Long Tom, were named, but what got me with this is I felt like it was a poorly edited down version of the story. I felt like it had almost jump cuts, if you will, and things were happening between too many things were happening between the panels from when we cut away to Doc and back to Doc that it's like, wait, what happened? And it felt clumsy in that regard.
Yeah. It's, I guess, they call Ham Ham. They do call Rennie Rennie. They call Long Tom by name. They don't, I think, call Monk out by name when he's the guy in the chemistry classroom.
Yeah, no, they don't call him out by name. But it's one of those things.
And neither do they Johnny, who's the guy with the glasses. I don't. Oh, maybe they do. I guess Rennie's talking on the phone to him, and he says Johnny. But I just...
It felt like a series of non sequiturs. When every time they would cut to one of his cast members or whatever that we hadn't been introduced to, didn't know who they were, or that they were part of Doc's crew at this point from this story. I was not happy with the art. I didn't know that they were so much off-model, just so much as not greatly drawn. And I'm really glad this came out after First Wave, because if this had come out before First Wave, I think people would have read this, been very disappointed, and skipped First Wave.
And not exactly. Well, look at the cover. You got the normal cover, right?
Yeah, with Doc and his guys behind him.
Well, look at Doc on the cover.
Yeah.
That's what Doc should look like.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It's like, look at Rennie on the cover. He's the, so right on the cover, if you look, just to the left of Doc with the dapper guy with the hat, that's mm-hmm. Ham.
Okay.
The left of him is Rennie.
Okay.
Big guy, big hands, Then the guy at the hat with the eye patch, that's Johnny. To the right of Doc is Long Tom. It's a little less pale than he should look, but he's okay. And then you got the stocky, guy, that's Monk. This is an acceptable set of interpretations of these guys.
Yeah.
You look inside and it's just like, nah, no.
Yeah. No, I was again, very disappointed with that main story. And I think Doc Savage deserves better treatment. I expected he'd get better treatment than he got here.
Especially after First Wave and that Batman Doc Savage book, both of which were excellent, you know, and then they put out the title with his name on it, and it's so bad that I am not even going to pick up this title anymore. I can't. I like the Avengers story, don't get me wrong, but I refuse to support, right, I refuse to support this title, and you know what I'll do is I will pick these up, you know, out of dollar bins down the line and read the Avengers story. I'm just not even going to come back to this Doc Savage story.
Right. Well, and with that Justice Inc. story at the back, you know, I wasn't crazy about the art style. It wasn't bad, it's just not to my tastes, but the story was decent, not overly original. And it followed kind of that same outline I was talking about with Codebreakers last week. Establish the team, put one in danger, the rest of the team unites to rescue him. Big difference. This did it in about half the pages, took about 10 pages. And I felt it was a bit more interesting and a little less by the numbers than Codebreakers. But this in half, you know, 10 pages versus whatever the front story was, I thought was the much better half of the book. And you know, even that I didn't think was brilliant, but it was at least entertaining. I'm going to stick with this for a couple of issues. One, because I've pre-ordered them. Two, train wreck in action, kind of want to see where it goes from here sort of thing. I'm curious if they can, if the backup story gets better and more interesting, because I suspect it will. I didn't think it was bad at all. Little things, like the guy adjusting the thermostat of, yeah, I'm rich, that didn't mean I got to go warm people up with it, you know, kind of thing.
Okay. Well, I really liked the backup story, and it's like, I don't know if it was just like, in contrast to how much I hated the front of the book, if it was just like, you know, this breath of fresh air, it's just, you know, it's like, wow, this is great. At least it's not the front half of the book.
I thought it was actually, even without the front half as a comparison thing, I thought the back was at least average, if not maybe slightly above. I mean, I'd give the back, the Justice Inc. story, a rating of a 3. And a strong one. The Doc Savage, I'd give a 2 and a weak one at that. But overall, I got to give this a 2 because it's Doc Savage on the cover. And particularly in comparison to how well the character's been treated in the Batman Doc Savage special and in First Wave, I came into this Doc Savage issue with certain expectations which it totally and completely failed to meet in any way, shape, or form. That I was flabbergasted just frankly how bad this was. And I agree with you. If you're a Doc Savage fan, skip this, read First Wave. And that to me is a horrible thing to say about a comic, you know? Skip the title solo series, go see him in an ensemble book. It's like, come on, something's not right with that.
So I give the Doc story a 1. Mm-hmm. And I can see edging the whole book up to a 2 on the strength of the backup.
But are you gonna, is the question.
I kind of don't want to because I don't even want to give this travesty that much of a nod. So I'm just going to go with a 1. Poorly executed. I just can't believe that somebody at DC looked at the art samples for this and just thought that they would greenlight this book. This is so unsuited for Doc Savage, or just are they so ignorant of this character that they're, you know, putting out a book on that they thought that this was a good idea? I can't imagine.
Well, and again, art sample, you know, art style aside or whatever, the story was so choppy. And
now this is this guy's first comics work. Apparently, he has written novels before, and I have talked to people who said that he's written very good novels. I'm thinking maybe this is another one of these cases where, you know, someone's not translating well from one medium to another.
But again, that goes back to editorial. They should have realized, hey, this is the guy's first comic. Let's give him a little extra coaching, a little extra attention, something, you know. And maybe he'll grow into the format. But to put a writer who hasn't done comics on the first issue of what potentially is a reasonably high-profile book. I mean, Doc Savage has a following. They've just built up the First Wave stuff. This seemed like a very questionable move. I'm curious how long it'll last. At this point, I'd be surprised if it goes a year.
Yeah, I question the the wisdom of the writer in like deciding to have a lightning bolt shear the top several floors off the Empire State Building and have it fall to the ground intact in one chunk like it did in the art. This is...
Yeah, there's nothing like realism in comics, and that's nothing like realism in comics.
Anyway, steer clear. It's like, yeah. If you like Doc Savage, steer clear. If you've never read Doc Savage before, steer clear, because there's lots of better Doc Savages. You know, it's like, I would hate this to be somebody's, and unfortunately it will be. You know, this will be some large number of people's first exposure to Doc Savage character, and they're going to think it's a lame character because of what these people have decided to put out as this comic book.
Hopefully those people would have checked out First Wave or the Batman Doc Savage special, and that would have been their first exposure. But you're right, this is a good chance to be somebody's first exposure, and it's not a good choice for that. Shall we move on?
Yeah, let's move on to Black Widow.
I thought this had a little bit of a slow start, but I was really impressed by just how much story there was in this issue. And, I mean, I liked Black Widow's character. Wasn't sure if we needed a series for her or not, but, you know, was happy to give it a shot, certainly. And they hooked me on the series. This is a good use of supporting characters like the Bucky Captain America, Tony Stark, and Wolverine. I felt this had a unique style and tone to the story that doesn't really duplicate any other Marvel book out there. I think it fits in well with kind of those street-level characters, you know, the Daredevil stuff, you know, back when they were doing Iron Fist, and that kind of corner of the Marvel Universe, if you will. And I was very pleased with this. I thought this was a very solid story. The characters seemed very intelligent. They did some interesting stuff with her. And I respect the fact they decided to include that Black Widow saga backup feature to kind of get some people up to speed if they needed to be. So I thought this was a solid package, worth the $3.99, and very happy with it. What did you think?
I was a little less enthused about it. I thought it was a good story. I thought it was definitely the first chapter of a trade as opposed to a standalone first issue. To me, I question the wisdom of taking the first issue of Black Widow and just having her get her butt handed to her and have her spend the bulk of the story, or at least the back half of it, on an operating table while the supporting characters run around and do stuff, and you see her in a couple of flashbacks. There's too many Black Widow stories out there, including that miniseries that just happened where she ends up getting smacked around. You know, it's like she's a very strong, smart character, and I'd really like to see her featured in some stories where she's not
like the victim, but the hero, maybe,
you know, not being victimized and being put into this subordinate position right out of the gate, you know?
And that's a fair comment. I hadn't really seen it that way, but you're exactly right. That's exactly what's happening here. You know, it as they gave her a couple of action sequences or whatever at the beginning, set her up, but wanted to show she, I don't want to say had feet of clay, but was not perfect or whatever. So I felt that while I see where you're coming from of this being kind of the first chapter of a trade where, I mean, hell, we barely get introduced to the bad guy at the end here, it at least had enough story in that first chapter that I was satisfied.
Yeah, and I can agree with that. It's just, you know, I'm assuming that she's going to come out of this and she's going to come back and she's going to be triumphant. And when you read this as like a 5 or 6 issue story, that's the impression that you're going to be left with. You know, in this one, you're left with the impression that, okay, she comes up. You know, I like the whole thing with the armored glove.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, with her experience, I mean, hell, she's been a spy for 50 years or something. You know?
Yeah, she's not good at it by now.
You know, she catches that and then she sidesteps the dart that gets shot at her because she's smart. And she knows that somebody was out there lurking. You know, it's like she would have been dead a long time ago if she could get taken down that easily.
Yeah.
It's just, it was a story device that personally I don't like how they do that with this particular character far too much. I would really prefer if they showed her as being strong, super confident, and, you know, she doesn't have like superpowers, right?
Right.
I mean, but, you know, it's kind of like she's James Bond. You know, it's like, and I guess he gets knocked in the head every now and again, too. So, you know, I can see that, but...
But your point about the supporting cast almost taking over the book for the back half, I mean, at the end of this, it's just as likely that Wolverine's going to star in the next issue as Black Widow, you know? So I can see that aspect, too, and that's a fair comment.
And it's not a bad book. I mean, I liked the story, like you did. I thought it was a good one. I just question the direction and choices that Marjorie Liu made in this being the very first issue of a series. You know, I would have really preferred, especially since it's a series with a female lead, I would have preferred that she came across as really strong and competent and, you know, just carried that first issue without ending up, you know, on an operating table having guys save her bacon, you know. Just personal preference there.
No,
I mean,
yeah,
I still liked it. I'm still going to get the series, but it knocked it down to a 3 for me. When, you know, if the story would have gone a different way, I can see it having been a much higher grade.
Interesting. I gave it a 4, but again, the things you were pointing out hadn't really jumped out at me as negatives, but again, I totally see where you're coming from there. And what I liked is, again, it was a different, it felt like it fit in the Marvel Universe, but it also felt like it didn't duplicate half the titles out there. But
I completely agree with that. That's true.
But you're right that it would have been really nice if Black Widow had actually starred in the entire issue, had been the hero of the entire issue and stuff like that. I'm willing to give that, you know, a couple issues into the story arc to really get up to speed or whatever, and we'll see where it goes. But this is one that I think has the potential to stick around for a while, whereas, again, like the Doc Savage we just talked about, not so much. And I hope that they keep this having, a unique feel and style to it that doesn't duplicate other books. I gave this a 4. I thought it was really strong, and it set stuff up. It progressed the story, had a number of plot points where just, you know, enough things happen, enough different scenes are shown to us kind of a thing where I didn't feel like... We got, because, I mean, you go back to the first issue of the Hulk series, there were 4 scenes, not much happened in any of them, you know, and it's like that was pretty lightweight material here, you know, between her meeting with the Black Rose, her getting taken out after that fight scene, the operating table, the flashback, all this other stuff. I mean, enough happened that, while I agree with you, it does, you know, it's the first part of a story, it was a larger part of a story than we typically get in that sort of a situation.
Right.
Want to see where it goes, but, you know, hopefully they'll address some of your concerns and stuff in future issues.
Okay. And our indie book is from IDW. It's called Pantheon. Big Michael Chiklis on the looking dude on the front pit cover, and I guess co-created by Michael Chiklis with Annie Simon Beck and Mark Andraco. But Mark Andraco is doing the actual writing of this series. Mark Andraco, of course, known by me primarily for his work on the Manhunter series, which I love, from DC. So what do you think of this one?
I had really mixed feelings on this. Didn't hate it. Didn't love it. It got me curious, but not hooked. Thought the art was okay. Not excellent. Yeah, I got the job done. Really, that's what matters. But it didn't wow me with that. And really, this thing could go in just a number of directions, and this issue didn't give me a clear sense of the tone or direction of the series at all, and that leaves me a little wanting and not in a good way. I mean, we've seen modern-day gods done before a number of times, sometimes well, sometimes not, and so far there's not really enough information in this issue to know if we're going to get something new in that kind of a area or not. And there were a couple of things that... I mean, this whole bit with Miami having gotten, I guess, flooded or whatever, I'm like, well, what's up with that? You know, there were a few things about the setup of the story that just didn't make sense to me, were not explained. I mean, the whole Greece suddenly has oil under it and people are fighting for the rights to that. It's like, okay, a little odd, but I'll buy that as the premise. Then suddenly, you know, we cut to old Miami, which is completely flooded out. I'm like, well, what the hell's up with that? Didn't bother me, but it's like, it raised questions that didn't really make sense. We get a couple of things that presumably, you know, get at least Zeus back in action. It was interesting. Like I said, I'm curious about it, but, and I'll stick with it for a couple of issues to see where it goes, but it's not one where I came out of this thinking, wow, I really got to be reading this book, you know, whereas I did with Black Widow and not so much with Doc Savage, other than the train wreck aspect, that this one has potential, but I felt more of it should have been realized in this issue than was. How about you?
I guess I didn't have all of the same concerns you did. I mean, I thought that this issue was primarily set up. I would have liked to have seen a little more story advancement in it, in addition to all the setup. I do like the characters that they did introduce. The what looks to be the take on the, you know, Greek gods in the modern world is a little different than I've seen before. While we've seen this same basic theory, you know, a number of times, it looks like they've got a little different take on it this time. So that's good.
So what do you think their take is?
It looks to be that they've been around, you know, a long time, and they've just been kind of hiding, and they seem to have been hiding in mortal form, but I don't know. You see this Zeus-looking guy, and he's, like, sitting in a room, right?
Yeah, I mean, clearly he's been around, but it's, I don't know, it's confusing as to, you know, was he around but unpowered and when they opened the box?
Well, he doesn't seem to be unpowered, but maybe you're right. Maybe it is because they opened the box.
Exactly. I mean, before that, what was his state or whatever? So, I don't know.
And he seems to have been in Miami because they show this high-rise in Miami. They show the box gets open, boom, you got the big thing go off. You got the flash by the thing in Miami, and, you know, and there he is sitting. Now he has the powers. I don't know. It was interesting enough for me to come back again for issue number 2.
And again, that's where I'm at. I'm curious that I'll give it a little more time. It didn't throw me out of the series, if you know what I mean, but it didn't hook me either. And I think it goes to your point of a little more story in this issue would have helped.
Yeah, it just seemed like it was mostly set up. They threw a lot of partially formed ideas out there, and you're kind of following along the thread here of the kind of stuff that's going along, like with this box. And it's like, well, you're going to find out more about that. You're going to find out more about Zeus. You're going to, you know, oh, are there other gods besides Zeus? I'm figuring, okay, there probably are. But they leave those questions unanswered.
I would say they don't really even raise the question of the other gods in this issue, but it's a logical one to have.
Yeah. Well, I have that question. It's like, yeah.
No, and it's a good question. It's a fair question, but it's one that I think you have because you know Zeus is part of a pantheon, not because there was anything in this to make you think that. I mean, in other words, if it hadn't been Zeus.
Fair enough. You have to bring that context to the story. You're right. They don't give you that context within the story of this issue at all.
Exactly.
It's something you have to bring to the story from your prior, you know, knowledge of this kind of stuff. So that's fair.
Which is not an unreasonable expectation, given the Greek gods are reasonably well known, or is it the Roman? I always get Zeus and Jupiter mixed up. Anyways, this is one that set a foundation. I thought the foundation it set was solid enough, but not rock solid. You know, again, what's going on with Miami? Why should we care? You're right. The characters they introduced were reasonably interesting. It was not a bad story at all. But in this day, in this marketplace where there are so many things fighting for our attention, I mean, all three books we picked this week were first issues. You know, there were, I think, a few other first issues that came out this week. And I think there is not only the expectation, but the need for titles to start off very strong. And I thought this was, I gave this a 3. I thought it was an average book.
I gave it the same rating. And you know what I really think would have served them well here would have been like Radical has done on occasion with a first issue, and just make it extra sized so that you put a little bit more story content in that first issue to really ensure that you're setting that hook.
Yeah. And I think you're right. That's a smart move on Radical's part to have the extended space to really set the scene. And we've seen that in a few other things we've talked about, you know, where, you know, again, S.H.I.E.L.D. number one last week, the Cloak and Dagger one-shot the week before, where having the additional couple of pages allowed them to get just enough more story in there that it felt that much more satisfying than your average issue. And that's just a really smart thing to do, I think, these days with the start of a new series.
Right.
So certainly I think this is worth checking out if you're curious about it. Again, nothing turned me off on it, but they failed to really sell me on the series. At this point, it's kind of still on that probational basis. And there's nothing wrong with that. But you know, I think titles are better off when I'm done with that first issue thinking, wow, I've just got to add this to my pull list forever. So,
yeah, like I said, I didn't dislike the book. I didn't totally love it either. There needed to be a little bit more in this first issue for me to come out of it saying, wow, this is really great. I mean, I thought it was interesting. I thought it raised, like I said, some interesting questions, which is fine, but, you know, could have been a little more.
Well, I guess I would classify this issue, at least for the two of us, because it sounds like we're pretty much on the same page here, as it wasn't a success, because we're not thinking, wow, we just got to add it to the pull list. But conversely, it also was not a failure, because we're also thinking we're not going to add it to the pull list. We're on probation. It's gotten us to check out that second issue. And that in and of itself is a sign of some success. So, you know, is that enough or not for them? Time will tell.
Well, as an example, we looked at, what was that image book with the God guy running around in it that we did? God Complex.
God Complex, right? Yeah. Again, similar kind of concept.
I read the first issue of that, and I came away thinking, this seems pretty much the same as a bunch of other stories that I've read. I don't really need to come back for number two.
Yeah.
Whereas this one, there was enough to it that I thought, it looks like they're doing something different here, you know.
Well, they at least haven't convinced us they're doing the same thing.
Well, to be fair, you know, to your point, it's like they, you know, a lot of the questions I brought up were ones that I kind of schemed up on my own, right? But at the same time, I don't feel like it's I don't feel like it's a carbon copy of stories that I've read before. So it gives me enough that, you know, I look at it and say, yeah, I want to come back and see what goes on here.
And maybe that's the key difference between our two positions here, because while we're more or less on the same page, I guess I'm coming back because I feel they didn't give me enough here to know if it's a carbon copy of something we've seen before or not. You know what I mean? I agree that there's certainly the potential it's going to be very different, but that's more on faith than on what's on the page.
Well, that's true, and I'm going off of the fact, you know, you're right, but they didn't give me something in this issue
exactly that we know we've seen before.
The fact,
yes,
that it's a carbon. That's my point.
Yeah, and I agree
I
with
didn't
that.
Look at this and say, wow, this is a total carbon copy of story that I've seen before. It looks like it's different, and the fact that I've read stuff by Mark Andreyko before and really enjoyed it, that goes a long way. If this was Joe Blow writing this,
yeah,
I would be a lot less likely to have as strong of a feeling about it as I do right now.
Well,
you know, in positive, because, you know, I'm just kind of, you know, most things I've read, I mean, I can't recall reading something by Andreyko that was just, you know, that I didn't like or that was just hackneyed. He's a good writer, and he tells some pretty gifted stories. So I'm kind of thinking, okay, you know, given that he's the guy who's behind the wheel on writing this thing, you know, it's likely that he'll turn it into something.
Well, and that's a really good point, because I think part of what we're going on is the strength of the creative team and our faith in that, hey, what we saw was good, and we're not hooked, but we have enough faith in both what we saw on the page and who the creators are. We'll give them the next issue almost, I don't want to say no questions asked, but you know what I mean. Whereas if this had been done by Bruce Jones, who I think we really have not liked, you know, his Dead Man series, his Warlord series, you know, a lot of the other stuff he's done in the past, even the War That Time Forgot that we liked, we thought, I think both felt it had a weak ending. That if it had been somebody who's had a track record along those lines, I think we might have been much less likely to say, let's come back for a second issue.
Well, if you go that far, I would not have been likely to pick up the first issue.
That's fair, too.
Okay. You know, I'm more in the camp of, you know, given that it's, you know, someone who doesn't have, you know, who has a positive track record, you know, versus someone that I've never heard of before. You know, kind of like, you know, like the Image book where it's, you know, someone, or even this Doc Savage book, you know, it's a guy who's written some novels, but you've never, you know, heard of him before, and you can't look at his other comics work and say, oh, I liked X. You know, it's a totally unknown quantity.
Yeah, I do think we're at the point where the track record of the creators is becoming, at least I think for us and probably for quite a few people, a very determining factor of do they try out a new series or not. And that's something that, you know, the Paul Malmont, who wrote Doc Savage, has gone from a unknown to us to a not so good writer for us, you know, and that's now almost a strike against him for the next new thing he tries to do. And part of that's at the whim of how good people's memories are and how strong of an impression people make, but something I think creators and publishers, you know, need to be aware of if they're not. I'm sure they already are. You know what I mean?
I mean, for us, I mean, we're probably a little more hardcore into looking, I wouldn't say probably, we are more hardcore in looking at that kind of stuff than your average person. Because, you know, a lot of people, they'll go into a shop and they'll, you know, pick things up off the rack and they'll say, oh, this looks cool. They might flip through it and make a determination based on that, whether they're going to buy it or not. And that's something that people should be thinking about also, because there is a certain element of that causing people to buy comics. So you want to have a first issue that is going to have that, you know, rack appeal. I think that's probably a little more important for a Marvel or DC book, because they're more likely to get on the rack in the first place without having a strong hook.
Yeah, yeah. But, I mean, how many times on our previous teleconference have we heard somebody say that basically they've never heard of this creator, therefore they're not going to try this book?
Right.
Which is an understandable reaction and one that I think we share too. So it's, I don't know, just interesting. Again, like you said, Andrejko being on the Pantheon stuff, I think was enough to get us to check it out. Had it been a lesser writer or an unknown writer, we probably would not have been talking about it this episode.
Right. That's absolutely true. And, you know, like I said, he's got a really good track record with me. And, you know, I'll give anything he writes. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, it's like, you know, Brubaker puts out something new. Bendis puts out something new. You know, I'm going to give these creators, you know, even, you know, Hickman, Rick Remender, even though I won't make the mistake of mixing those two up this time. But, you know,
you sure?
even though I'm not enthused by the Punisher stories Remender's telling, that's pretty much the only thing I've ever read by him that I didn't really care for. So he still has a good track record. I mean, it's not like, okay, you write one thing I don't like, so I'm never going to read you again. I mean, it's like he's written a whole ton of stuff that I've really enjoyed. So I would pretty much pick up something by him, no questions asked. You know, same thing, Hickman. Well, I've loved most everything he's done. You know, I see his name on something, I'll pick it up, no questions asked. And it works a little bit the same way for artists, you know, because I look at, you know, Frank Cho or Art Adams or, you know, guys like that. It's like, if I see they're doing the art on something, I don't really care who the writer is. Even if it's a writer who I would normally not pick something up by,
mm-hmm.
like for as case in point, Mike Grell. Oh, I love Mike Grell. You know, so normally I don't buy Chris Claremont books. And when I saw that, X-Men Forever Annual, and it's written by Chris Claremont with art by Mike Grell. It's like, well, I'm going to buy that because it's got art by Mike Grell, even though I don't normally prefer Chris Claremont stories of late.
Yeah.
You know? That I can understand so that creator cachet, it has a lot to do with my decision anyway, on whether I'm going to pick something up. And you know, for people who've been in comics for any amount of time, I think it's the same kind of way. I mean, you start knowing who creators are that that you enjoy, and you'll watch for those guys and give them that benefit of the doubt.
Well, I think everybody, to some degree or another, breaks the creators into the three groups of, I like these, I don't like these, and I either don't know or don't remember these. So, you know, it comes down to, is it a plus, minor, or a neutral kind of a sales thing? And that's something that, you're right, builds up over time.
Right.
One other thing I want to talk about, moving on just to the general comics that came out this week, was we got
we got Brightest Day Zero.
Brightest Day Zero was the one that was supposed to come with a white ring, wasn't it? Because I got a...
I think Brightest Day number one.
That's it. Brightest Day.
Right.
Yeah.
The white.
Because we got another Green Lantern ring, and this seems to be a slightly different one than what we got before, only in so much as if you look on the inside of it, it's got some other number stamped that the previous run of rings didn't have. And then with the Flash number one, We got a new ring, which...
Now, that's a different Flash ring, because the other Flash ring I have is, like, all yellow.
It's a different color.
This one's gold, but it also has the white painted outside the lightning bolt, whereas the other one was just a molded piece of yellow plastic.
Yeah, this one
didn't have any highlighting on it.
Right.
So.
But the color is the only difference. It seems to be the same mold, again, other than the little details imprinted on the back of, you know, when it was created or whatever. But it's the same basic mold. It's funny, though, with the color difference, it looks a hell of a lot better. You know, again, the gold versus the yellow and the white behind the light.
Well, and I think that's because, you know, if it's supposed to be, you know, Flash really wearing a ring, it would be gold colored. It wouldn't be bright, you know,
bright
happy
yellow.
Face emoticon yellow.
Yes, yes. That is the actual Crayola name for that color, folks. I thought these were good. I'm looking forward to getting the white ring, I guess, week after next or whatever with the Brightest Day number one. Did read Brightest Day zero. Loved it. Thought it was great. Answered a couple of questions. Raised a few new ones, I think. And looks like it'll be a fun series. So I hope people are checking that one out.
Yep. Flash number one, I liked. I mean, there were some elements to it that puzzled me a little bit. Like, what's like a 10-year-old kid doing standing around a construction site in a hard hat just so a car can plummet in his direction and the Flash can save him?
There is that.
That seemed a little odd.
Bring your son to dangerous job day.
I guess, you know, it's like they didn't show the guy down in the coal mine with his little kid and, you know.
The guy working at the explosive factory with his son who smokes.
Guy out on the crab boat or something, you know. I don't, just okay. And I didn't really understand what that speed effect was of him running around the car, how that exactly worked.
Apparently, with no tools, he was able to completely disassemble the car at super speed. I'm quite curious how he did that, why he did that.
Strong fingers, I guess.
And why he didn't.
Or maybe he carries a little toolkit in his shoe or something.
That actually would be funny.
And it came out and went back before we even noticed.
Yeah, he's got a toolkit ring next to the Flash costume ring.
Yeah, there you go.
I'm just surprised he didn't reassemble it on the ground. Overall, I liked it. I think they're doing some interesting stuff with Flash, both there and in Brightest Day. I'm glad to see Barry Allen back. Curious what they're going to do with some of the other characters. Really, at this point, the Flash supporting cast member I'm most curious about is Wally's son, Jay, who currently seems to have no powers. And there seems to be a story waiting to be told there in terms of how he adjusts to that, all that sort of a thing. And I hope that they kind of play up the Flash family and legacy aspect in this title. I'm certain they will. I liked having Barry back at the police station doing the crime lab stuff and kind of the difference between crime labs now versus pre-CSI, the TV show sort of a thing, and how they had no open cases back when he was working it in the day, and now they've got, you know, a huge backlog.
Well, I got the impression there that it was like if anything was hard at all to solve, the direction they have is just to throw it in the cold file and to push out and solve as many cases as possible that are just easy to solve.
Yeah, very much a go fast, go furious. If it's taken too much time, we've got other crimes to solve, tackle them. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out over time.
I had a whole bunch of number one issues in addition to that one this week. I don't know. Did you read all your books this week?
No, I have not. The other number ones, I have not read Cold Space. Curious about that. Did not read Halcyon or whatever. Did read Hulked Out Heroes. And I didn't think it was horrible, but I could see where you didn't like it because it was essentially a Deadpool book.
Yeah.
Iron Man Legacy number one I read. I read the Irredeemable special number one, which I thought was interesting.
I like that Iron Man Legacy. I don't know if that's... it doesn't seem like it's normal Marvel continuity. Doesn't seem to be fully movie continuity either, but it does seem to just be kind of like a Iron Man continuity light that would be a series friendly to people who are going to go see the Iron Man movie or something.
Yeah, that's kind of where I'd place it too, in that nebulous. Not,
but it was
movie,
a good
not
story.
Comics, not. Yeah. It was. I enjoyed it. Have not read Light number one yet. I did not read Mindfield Zero either. Did read the Siege one-shots for Cap, Loki, and Young Avengers.
I read all three of those. I thought they were pretty well done. I like the Cap one probably the best.
Art was a little shaky in places on that one, though. Overall, they were good. I'm curious if they're ever going to really do anything with the Young Avengers in terms of an ongoing. Did not read McCoy number one, but looking forward to that. And did read Spider-Man Origin of the Hunter number one, though.
So I read McCoy. Mm-hmm. I liked it. I won't give any spoilers for you, but you know. John Byrne for
Star
me,
Trek.
He's just got a really knack for telling those classic Trek stories.
He does.
You know, it's the McCoy story. I thought it was really pretty well done. Now, the Mindfield Zero I read, I liked it. I thought it was a real good use of a number zero issue. They had a nice action story that introduces the characters. They did a little bit of setup for the world. And they had some who's who type pages that, you know, highlight who the different characters are and give a little bit of background and motivation for those characters, which is, you know, something that's good. I read the Wolfskin 100th Dream number one, which you will steer well clear of. At first, I didn't know I was even reading a Wolfskin story. It's a little wordy, but then I got into the like really violent stuff around page 10 that would keep you away from it.
Yeah.
It settled down into something that's kind of like a Dungeons and Dragons style quest with, you know, five party members, of which Wolfskin is, you know, the violent fighter guy type of member. So I liked it. It was good. Did you get Fever Dream number one from Avatar?
No, I did not.
Now that one you might like. It's not like a normal Avatar book. It's more like Anna Mercury.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's got like mysterious characters, vampires, Mississippi river boots, you know, it's like a little bit of gratuitous nudity thrown in there. Decent art. I'm intrigued by the story. I'll be back. I'll try that one out. Now, on the other hand, the Halcyon number one, I'll be curious when you read this one. I can see that there are people who will like this one.
That was the one that struck me as something that I would like more than you would like.
It's a sci-fi story. What I didn't like about it was more in the mechanics of it than anything else. They just had a lot of overly wordy captions, and they were kind of threading different pieces of story through. I was a little unclear on the motivations of people, and just it's one of these things where it's like if I read a book and I come out of it kind of scratching my head saying, what the hell happened there? You know, it's like,
yeah, that's never a good sign.
So anyway, it wasn't my cup of tea, but I can see that it'll probably hit other people a little better. And then I read the Pilgrim number one from IDW that's got Grell art, but that's one where even though it's got really nice Grell art, and like I just finished saying, I'll buy anything with Grell art. That's why I picked this one up. The storytelling in it was really kind of thin. There was a lot of stuff where the story was, you know, there'd be a page or so without any dialogue or captions whatsoever. It'd be some flashback, and there's all these scenes, and it's just like, I had a hard time figuring out what the heck was going on and what they're trying to tell me with this one. Got a little conflicted on that one. But a lot of stuff came out this week. A lot of...
It was a huge week.
Months. I mean, I had, you know, we had Doc Savage 1, Black Widow 1, Pantheon 1, Brightest Day 0, Flash number 1, Halcyon 1, Pilgrim 1, Fever Dream 1, Iron Man Legacy 1, Wolfskin 1, McCoy 1, Mindfield 0. That's like 12 books right there that are all like first issues that I got. Yeah, that's a lot of number one issues to come flying out. And that's probably not even all of them that came out.
Well, and that's why I was saying earlier that books need to start out strong these days. There's too much competition, you know. And not only was there just that many new things coming out this week, but I had 49 items in my shipment this week. Now, you can take out two because of the rings, or one of them because of the rings. One of them because it was the Life and Times of Scrooge McDuck hardcover, not a issue of a comic. But, I mean, that's still, you know, 47 or whatever comics I got this week. So, you know, when you've got something like a Doc Savage that doesn't start strong, or in that case started particularly weak, you can't expect people to come back for the next issue. There's just too many things fighting for their attention, fighting for their dollars, just within the comic arena. Then look outside of that at video games, movies, DVDs, television shows, music, etc. You got to bring your A game, so...
Yep, absolutely. Oh, and for everyone listening to this episode, next Saturday is Free Comic Book Day. Go out to your local comic book shop, get some free comics, buy a comic or two, support your local retailer.
And tell your friends about it. Get them to go to the comic shops. And because, I mean, there are a lot of people, I think, that would enjoy the comics that are out there that just don't know where a comic shop is, don't think to go get one. And, I mean, most people aren't going to turn down free stuff. And if, I mean, that may be enough to get a coworker or a friend or whatever reading some comics. So it's worth a try.
Join us next week when we discuss The Spirit number 1 from DC, Guardians of the Galaxy number 25 from Marvel, and Magdalena number 1 from Image Top Cow.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.